championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we got a special guest in one of the newest commitments of many, in Hayden Connor of the 2021 offensive tackle, the latest 2021 commit to join the class and the beginning of Texas's foray into that loaded 2021 offensive lineman class. But before that, we go into just a we're going to touch a little bit on the Big 12 Media Days as that happened last week, then get into the rest of the commitments that happened over the past, how long, about a week or so?
12 days or so.
Yeah, crazy amount. And then talk about the guys who came in, what to expect out of them, and what to expect going forward. So, Joe, before we get into the Hayden Connor interview, let's get into a little bit, just a tiny bit of Big 12 Media Days, because we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about one of the signs that football season is upon us, as all of the Big 12 coaches and some of the players make their way to Dallas, to Jerry World, to partake in the festivities.
Yeah, it's the beginning of talking season, as Steve Spurrier once said. And it began really interestingly with Les Miles, who looked incredibly aloof on stage, trying to explain away why Puka Williams is only missing one game. He passed the buck really hard on that one, said it was above him. And, you know, even if that's the case, that doesn't mean that he can't leverage or levy additional punishment. But, you know, he just passed the buck. But then, you know, he started talking, and I wasn't the only one who thought this. I've listened to other podcasts, talked to other reporters who were there. They thought he kind of looked lost up there. Like, you know, Les Miles always succeeds in the press setting, basically. You know, he's such a charmer. Thank you. Have a great day. You know, that type of thing. And he had to check notes. Like, he looked like he wasn't sure about what he was going to say. So it got off onto a very odd note. But after that, you know, I don't think there was anything, at least on the big stage, that was too shocking. I really like listening to Matt Wells. I think that he understands that, you know, he's got a little bit of, he's still got some talent there. He had to basically replenish the entire tight end position since Tech basically ran a four wide offense, but there's some pieces there to work with, and he's got, you know, he's got a good offensive coordinator, and he did really well at Utah State. Don't have to go through everybody. Lincoln Riley, you know, he's good in the media. He's sometimes monotone, but that he doesn't, you know, get out over his skis in any sort of emotion. And Tom Herman was Tom Herman. I don't think there was anything super notable. I mean, obviously,
no
with
long 20-second pauses.
No, exactly. But, you know, with, like we mentioned, I think on the last podcast, we're around Texas a lot, where as a result of seeing and going to games elsewhere, we kind of see how all, you know, the other coaches interact with the media and that type of thing. And, you know, we're there to write about Texas, or at least I was. Ian Boyd, he goes a little bit more in depth into the rest of the conference, but, you know, the guys who I was there with, Justin Wells and Ian Boyd, we cover Texas, so we're there to, you know, kind of ask about things as it pertains to Texas. But you get guys from ESPN.com, a lot of national athletic writers were there, like Max Olson and Bruce Feldman and guys like that, and Brett McMurphy from Stadium. Like, there's a lot of national guys there, and of course, you know, there's media from other schools. And the big thing after this offseason, after Baker Mayfield decided to make some comments about Sam Ehlinger and how they probably have a distaste for each other, and Terry Bradshaw about how, you know, they 5A quarterback, whatever that is supposed to mean, how Sam Ehlinger is not one of those, that was going to be a really big subject. Like, okay, you know, all this offseason, we've heard about Texas was back. Sam Ehlinger, you said it on the big stage. You know, what does that mean? And I get that. That's a relevant question. But the thing is, you know, on the day that Texas was there, there's not much interest in me going and talking to, you know, the Texas Tech players, Iowa State players. Sure, I'll ask Matt Campbell a question or two just to kind of see his landscape or his view of the landscape of the conference and maybe ask a little bit about his defense because of so much of the overlap. But I spent most of my time around the Texas players and they were asked constantly, you know, hundreds of times about, what do you think about Baker Mayfield? What do you think about, you know, Terry Bradshaw? What do you think about Kyler Murray? And the overarching response, not only from Tom Herman, not only from Sam Ehlinger, but also from the other guys over there, Colin Johnson, Malcolm Roach, Brandon Jones, was, you know, who cares what people outside the program say? And that's to be expected from a football team like Tom Herman's. I mean, I think after, what, two seasons another spring, we're used to how he operates and know that he's probably going to say, hey, you know, outside noise, blah, 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 doesn't matter. And, you know, when you have that many national media there, it's going to get asked a lot. And they were very resolute in saying the same thing over and over. You know, it does not matter the opinions of those outside the program. So it was, other than that, though, Tom Herman, you know, that's an hour of Tom Herman, basically, that he's got to sit out and field questions from the media. And obviously he'll get recruiting questions as far as, you know, the general landscape and stuff like that. He was asked about Rashad Samples leaving for SMU, which happened during his big speech at Big 12 Media Days. And he said, you know, we wish him well, something along the lines of, we wish him well. You know, he's moving up in his career. We thank him for what he did and we look forward to see what he does at SMU. But there was some good, you know, good bits of team information and, you know, how guys are looking on the practice field and stuff like that. Jake Smith was a guy that got mentioned a couple times, and Parker Braun obviously got mentioned a couple times. So overall, a good experience. But as far as the main themes that a lot of national media tried to bring in, it got deflected a lot. And as someone who is going to, you know, return to Austin and is going to return to Moncrief and DKR with other Austin media, I don't think that's going to become much of a talking point going forward, because A, we know it's going to get shot down, and B, I think we have better things to talk about at this point, because, you know, camp starts next Friday.
On top of all the national media and good talking points, there is often some people there who, you know, honestly really shouldn't be there. And they ask, there's some funny questions thrown around. So, Joe, the main question I have for you coming out of Media Days is, what's the stupidest or funniest or weirdest question that you heard fielded?
I don't know if this was silly or stupid, but it was the original question was not. But I think the follow-up was a little odd. And I'm not trying to rag on anybody, but you know, sometimes you can ask the obvious and know you'll get an obvious answer, and it's kind of like a give and take, like, hey, I'm setting you, you know, it's a softball question at times. But Big 12 Media Days were held on the field at AT&T Stadium, the home of the Big 12 championship game. The last time that most of those players that, you know, Sam Ehlinger and all the players were there, they lost. They lost to Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game for a chance to, you know, be a Big 12 champion for the first time this decade. And, you know, somebody asked them, it's like, what does that game impact? How did that game impact you? Very fair question. You know, it's one of those, you know, that was a tough loss and stuff like that. You know, just run of the, you know, good answer to a good question. And he kind of went back to the well again. Is it like, you know, does being here remind you of that? Kind of back to back, like, does being here kind of upset you? I think a few players were asked that, and it's just kind of like, I mean, what do you think I'm going to say? Like, no, we're cool with it now. Like, that type of thing. Like, that was something I thought was a little odd. Like, does being back in this building make you mad or bring back bad memories? It's like, I don't know, probably yes, and that type of thing. But other than that, I mean, the that was maybe annoying to me. I don't think anybody kind of turned and gave a weird look to that when it was happening. But I mean, it was kind of annoying to me, because you're thinking like, yeah, of course they're going to be a little bit reminded of the loss they suffered here last time they were here. Like, That's human nature. My last career high school football game, which I played like two plays in my entire season, we got knocked out of the playoffs in Temple Wildcat Stadium. And so with Taquan Graham, with Davian Curtis, with Jared Wiley, I've had to go back
to Quentin Johnston.
And now Quentin Johnston, I've had to go back to that stadium at least four times since I graduated high school. And it's just kind of like, oh yeah, last time I was here, Nolan Catholic beat us on some less than friendly calls. So of course, like, I know that feeling.
Not that you're salty about it or anything.
The TAPS Division I state title or state semifinal is nowhere near the stakes that the Big 12 championship is. But, I get that feeling. And somebody asked me, like, hey, how does it feel to be back here? I'd probably say, pretty poor. So.
But, Joe, I'm sorry to tell you this. There was actually a correct answer to this question. And the answer is, any question to anybody about whether or not there should be horns down and whether that should be allowed, because the answer is yes, because it's stupid to complain about it. Anyways, let's go ahead and bring us into the Hayden Connor interview. Here it is. Now on the line, we have Texas's newest 2021 commit in offensive tackle, Hayden Connor. Hayden, how are you doing? How's the weather in Katy now that you're a Longhorn?
It feels great. I'm doing awesome. A weight has been lifted off my shoulders now that I'm committed and I get to help recruit my class.
Well, that's interesting that you want to start off there, because when I talked to your father earlier, he told me that wherever you commit, you're going to be a recruiter as soon as you get there, and that you've been preparing for this, as he used to be a big recruiter when he played for Sam Houston State. So what's going to be your biggest pitch to recruits, and who is your biggest target, or who are your biggest targets?
I haven't really thought about who my biggest targets are, but if I were to pitch something to people, it would be whenever you come here, it's going to feel like family, which is true. It feels like home when you come down here.
So, it felt like home for you, obviously, before you made the decision on July 23rd, dropped one of the better commitment videos I think any of us have ever seen. So, felt like home, felt like family. Were those the two biggest factors that made you decide, this is the day and this is the time I'm ready to be a Texas commit?
Yes, sir, definitely.
So those were the two biggest things. Was there anything else in your decision that made you decide, hey, this is why I want to be a Longhorn? This is why July 23rd is the day that I'm going to be a Longhorn.
Well, of course, you got to consider education, and I mean education when I say it. Of course, aerospace engineering program at UT is unbelievable. And also when my friend Jalen committed there, it kind of lit the fire. I'm like, okay, it's time to build a national championship winning team.
So Mariba Ja. He's a name that probably most Longhorn fans really didn't know until you gave him a shout out on Twitter. What did he tell you? What was it that he sold you on? And why did he get the shout out? What did he do?
So when I went up, the last time I visited campus, I went and met with him. And we kind of talked about the engineering program and what I'm going to be able to do. And he started talking about what he does and what all the professors do. And what he does is he created an app that allows you to look at everything that's orbiting the Earth right now. And that's extremely specific. And every other professor does something extremely specific and opposite of each other. Like, no one does the same thing. Everybody's different. And that's what really spoke to me, is the diversity of jobs that were there.
Yeah, and you got that, I think, that engineering building that you'll be studying in. I think that's the newest building on campus, if not one of the newest buildings. So,
yes, sir. It was built on my birthday.
Awesome. Going to have some nice digs. On the football side of things, obviously, the academic aspect of any football recruitment is huge, and obviously it sounds like it's a huge part of your recruitment. But
you know, equally as big or just under that is the football side. And, you know, you're going to be in Herb Hand's position room once you get to Texas. Just about Herb Hand, what drew you to him and to realize, you know, this is the guy I want to be coached by for the next few seasons?
It comes down to the family part again. I get a real family feel whenever I'm around Coach Hand, and when I had the chance to come up to camp and he got to coach me, I got a real family kind of feel out of him, and I really enjoyed him. I am going to be playing with him for a while now.
And on top of that, Herb Hand played a big role, but tell me, how big of a role did Tyler Johnson and Logan Parr play in your comfort on the campus?
Yeah, Tyler Johnson and Logan Parr are super cool dudes. They weren't really – so, yes, they do make it more comfortable. They're going to welcome me, I hope, with open arms.
After a little hazing, but it's all right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, that's going to happen, and I'm going to be ready for it. But, no, I'm excited to be on campus with those two dudes and just build a good relationship with them.
So, and on top of that, Jalen Milroe, your friend since I don't know how long, but why is his commitment to Texas, why was that kind of the straw that broke the camel's back?
Because honestly, I've been leaning toward UT for a while, and I was supposed to head up to Michigan this weekend, and that would have been like my deciding factor to see if I'm going to go to either one of those schools. And once he committed Sunday, I kind of understood, like, okay, this is our destiny to go build a super team like we used to be in sixth and seventh grade. And that kind of spoke to me because I called him right after he did it. And I'm like, why'd you do it? And he goes, why can't we build a national championship team? Because why not?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this season, just now that you're a Longhorn commit and, you know, going to be wearing burnt orange for, you know, whenever you make it up to games. I got to ask, which game are you a little bit more excited about this year? Would it be, you know, the big out of conference game facing LSU at home in Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium under the lights? Or, you know, is it the rivalry game, the Red River shootout? Which game are you kind of more excited to see and see how Texas fares in it?
Oh man, I'm excited to see both because I'm gonna head up to the Red River rivalry and I'm going to the LSU game. I honestly can't tell you which one I'm more excited about.
Which one do you feel better going into? How about that?
Going into? Oh man. Oh, they're LSU and OU are both really good teams. I mean, both. Why not?
Hey, spoken like a true Longhorn, am I right, Joe?
Exactly. So the last question I got is, you know, not only are you on a very solid Katie Taylor team that's going to try and make another deep playoff run this year, but you're on a strong offensive line. You're on a strong offensive line last year with Andrew Coker there, who's now at TCU, and with you and with your teammate Bryce Foster there, it's going to be another strong offensive line this year. What do you expect this year for Katie Taylor and especially on the left side of that line with you and Bryce?
So me and Bryce actually aren't playing next to each other this year. He's playing right guard.
Okay.
So I expect very good things now that we're distributed across the line evenly. We're running a new type of offense, and I'm super excited to see what we can do against the teams that we go against.
And what about Bryce in terms of a recruiting standpoint? What are you going to try to sell to Bryce? And how confident are you in pulling him away from his mother's favorite school in Texas A&M?
I am confident that I can pull him because the deciding factor for Bryce, like how aerospace was a deciding factor for me, is shot and disc for him because he's a junior Olympic shot and disc thrower. When I'm going to try and recruit him, it's mainly going to be about that you'll be able to throw too and win the national championship.
And last question for you is, you know, you're obviously already on a really talented offensive line, but this 2021 class is being touted as maybe one of the best in quite a while. What is the ceiling for this 2021 class at Texas on the offensive line? who are the guys who you want to play with, and where do you think the sky is?
Oh, sky's the limit. I mean, you kind of set that up for me. If I had to choose people to play with on the offensive line, it would definitely be Donovan and Bryce. I know that there's a couple of 2020 guys that are studs that are already committed, like Logan Parr and Tyler Johnson. I feel me, Bryce, and Donovan mixing in with that 2020 group would create an amazing offensive line.
Hey, Hayden, you got any words for the Longhorn fans who are listening? I know there are quite a few who want to hear what the newest commit has to say.
I'm excited. I'm super excited. I want to thank everybody for welcoming me into the family, and y'all will only see positive things to come in the future.
Good stuff. Well, thank you again, Hayden. Congrats on your commitment. Congrats on the process going to the next step, which you went from a recruit to now a recruiter. So congrats on that, and look forward to talking to you later.
Yes, sir. Same here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Hayden.
And we're back. So thank you again to Hayden Connor for joining us for the past 10 minutes. He's an awesome dude. I'm really actually very happy that he committed to Texas, because honestly, off the field, he is one of my favorite guys to talk to. Finally, I get a guy who I really do it like one of my favorite recruits out there who gets to stay at Texas, because it was Austin Stogner and Max Wright. And we know how those ones ended up. Now I finally get a guy who, hey, I actually really enjoy this kid. And he's a guy I get to cover for the next 6+ years. But, Joe, before we get into all the commitments, we got to talk about Samples. Because one of the big stories that happened while we were away was Rashad Samples leaving Texas for SMU. And his impact on the recruiting trail will probably be felt, the loss of him. So, Joe, how worried are you with the loss of Rashad Samples?
On a scale of 1 to 10, probably about a 3. Guys like Rashad Samples are great for getting your foot into the door. As an analyst, as a quality control guy at Texas, he can't go off campus. But, you know, he has connections to not only Skyline, not only to Duncanville, but to a lot of different Dallas schools, not only because of, you know, his reputation as a great player during his high school days, but the reputation of his dad and the connection he has to his dad, Reggie Samples, or at Duncanville. So you're losing a guy who is very good at getting his foot in the door in some recruitments, at starting out the relationship necessary to, you know, be passed on and to convince a kid about Texas. But at the same time, kids aren't necessarily choosing or weren't choosing Texas because of Reggie Samples. You know, you're choosing Texas because of your fit in the offense and your head coach and what the school brings to you. And obviously Rashad Samples was very, very good at that. And in addition, you know, he was able to help out on the field with his experience as a former player and, you know, understanding of the game. You're losing a bright young mind who was properly rewarded by SMU with an on-field job. So as far as my worry goes, like I said, probably about a 3. It's definitely a loss, but, you know, at the same time, it's still the loss of an analyst, of a quality control guy. And while Texas has, you know, was able to make a lot of inroads with him there, I believe they'll still be able to. The fact that Rashad Samples isn't there may not get you that immediate connection with so many kids like you had with Quadarius Davis that helped you there a lot. But that connection's still there. You know, people still know about Texas now because of guys like Quay Davis, because of guys like Jaquindon Jackson. There's still going to be, you know, some buzz within the city of Dallas about the University of Texas. And a lot of that is because of Rashad Samples' effect and his efforts. But I don't think that's something that's going to completely evaporate now that he is coaching at SMU.
Yeah, and on top of that, this is not a guy who you could just give a promotion to like you did with Brian Carrington, like you could do with Derek Chang. This is a guy who was in line for a coaching position. And right now, if you're Texas, you're not taking Rashad Samples straight from an analyst to a coaching position. When you have guys in your staff like David Beatty or UNC coach Larry Fedora?
Well, they were holding similar roles. Both of those guys were still analysts. They were basically on the same rung at this point. And basically, it's not so much Larry Fedora or the possibility of David Beatty that he was hitting the ceiling against. He was up against the ceiling of guys like Derek Wareheim, guys like Drew Mehringer and Corby Meekins. And Texas, you know, as bright a star as Rashad Samples is, he's not become bright enough to where you have to, without a doubt, you know, let go of somebody that you have built a connection with over these past few seasons, not only at U of H, but at Texas. And, you know, while a lot of people, I saw, you know, a few Twitter mentions said, what an awful mistake by Tom. No, this is not an awful mistake by Tom Herman. It stings a little bit that he's going, but like we've mentioned, like you're up against kind of the ladder of, you know, these guys have been with Tom Herman's staff for a while. They've proven to be pretty good at what they do at Texas, at least so as much to where they've won two straight bowls, competed for a conference title, and look to be going in the positive direction next year. Like you mentioned, there just really wasn't much of a place he could ascend to at Texas, and SMU was a very logical spot for him to go, back in his hometown and starting his career on the field as an assistant in Division I football in the G5. So, you know, it's a very, very smart move for him, and something I'm sure he'll probably do pretty well.
Right, right. And you and I are in agreement. I don't think, you know, obviously Darius Wareheim and Mehringer are already in that position. I'm saying, you know, if you were to go to the next level, to the analyst, it's not like he's the next guy. You're going after Beatty or Fedora and then Samples. Give Samples some time outside your program to actually get some good coaching experience at SMU, at another school like that. Then, if you need to, later down the road, give him a phone call. But let's go ahead and get off of that subject into some nicer subjects, as Texas really took that shot to the gut in stride and picked up the services of Vernon Broughton, which is a huge win over Texas A&M for Texas. Vernon, you know, Oscar Giles has been the punching bag for Longhorn fans for quite a while, as he has had some trouble against Terry Price over in A&M. And finally, Oscar Giles is giling and profiling. Am I right, Joe?
Exactly. Yeah, this was a wild, not wild. It was a roller coaster, though, for sure. Texas got the first official visit. After that, he took official visits to Arkansas, LSU, Ohio State, and A&M. And it kind of appeared there was a lot of buzz from all directions that A&M had done what they needed to do in that recruitment heading into when he's scheduled to announce, and even so far as possibly getting him to, you know, announce earlier than his stated timeline. But, you know, after he sat down with his family and started to take into account all five of the schools he went to, he eventually decided that Texas was the place for him, and, you know, the role that they had carved out for him there was one that he could definitely see himself in, and it's going to be a really great one. He's probably underrated by some of the various services, and, you know, while he that may be the case, whether he's kind of a little in between, like classic, you know, five technique, kind of in between classic three technique and one, he's a guy
that certainly
fits,
likes to play that position.
Yeah, he's kind of a in between those spots right now for the Texas defense. There's not a spot he's in between. He can play up and down the line, all three of the main defensive line spots for Texas. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to be a difference maker once he gets really, really refined into the specifics of the position, just because of the phenomenal athleticism he brings to the game. You know, he's decently new to football. I mean, he was a basketball player for I think the first few years. He even, you know, and now that he's picking up football and you know, that's where his future is, I think he's starting to really understand what he's got to do. And I think he's about to have an even bigger senior year than what he had last year, and set himself on the way for a great start to his career at Texas.
Right. And there are a few big guys who are 6'5", 290, 280, who possess the skills and tools that Vernon Broughton has currently. I was asked on our board, you know, what's the difference between DeMarvin Leal and Vernon Broughton? What are you getting in Vernon Broughton that you couldn't get in DeMarvin Leal? And what did DeMarvin Leal have that Vernon Broughton doesn't? And I would say DeMarvin Leal is your more typical defensive tackle. He is a mauler in the inside. He is a guy who will be able to take up blockers and has the frame that you typically associate with a big guy in the middle of the field. He's a guy who strength and conditioning coaches would probably love to just build on because it's a lot of time we say a guy has a good frame to build on just because they're 6'6 and 290 or whatever. No. DeMarvin Leal's body was pitch perfect. It was the perfect storm for any strength and conditioning coach. So he was very, very highly sought after just because of that. Vernon Broughton, though, has a lot more burst than DeMarvin Leal did. You can see it on their tape. It's night and day between them. Vernon Broughton is just, I don't want to say more of an athlete, but he's definitely got a step on DeMarvin Leal in terms of his burst and in terms of his speed. I don't know where the two rank in terms of strength, but Vernon Broughton, even if he doesn't have, you know, the potential strength that DeMarvin Leal might have, he has quite a lot. And he really showed that off when we went to see him in the opening final. He was taking on 5-star offensive linemen and really powering through them, whether he was a bull dodge, whether it was around the edge. He is definitely quite the athlete, and he moves exceptionally well for carrying 285 pounds on him at 6'5". Once Madison McKnight gets his hands on him, adds maybe 10 to 20 more pounds onto this guy, he's going to be a presence in the defensive tackle position for Texas. So again, this was already a huge win for Oscar Giles when Vernon Broughton decided, hey, he's going to commit out of the, you know, what he wanted to be, the blue, you know, try to surprise everybody because that's the thing to do these days. But I completely agree. I think Vernon Broughton is a completely underrated prospect. He'll get the DeMarvin Leal bump once we get later into this process. And Oscar Giles deserves a lot of credit for this, particularly because of how he won it, which was reported, I believe it was Mike Roach reported, he won it by playing spades with the mothers, with the grandmother and the mother, which, you know, can you imagine a more Oscar Giles way to win a recruitment, Joe?
Yeah, man, you gotta win them at the dinner table. You gotta win them in the living room, and you gotta win them at the card table sometime too. And this was one where Oscar Giles went 3 for 3. It looks like.
Yeah, for sure. And then the next day, or was it the next day?
I believe it was
the next day when everybody was already super high on Oscar Giles. He pulls another one out of the hat, and Van Fillinger, out of Utah, a high 3-star prospect who is, I believe, 6'4", 250, decides, hey, you know, why not now? And Texas, who was already worked up over in a frenzy over Vernon Broughton, and just, you know, it's funny I say frenzy because Longhorn Frenzy was having a day on Twitter. But they're already worked up in a frenzy, and then this drops. A guy who, his comp is Brian Roberson, Robinson, however you say that. I've heard it both ways. Joe, what do you think?
Robinson.
Robinson, okay.
That's what I got.
Robinson,
with.
And his comp is Brian Robinson. He's got the body for it. He's got the motor. He's got, you know, he's got the absolute crazy athleticism. A 4.25 shuttle. On top of him, he maxed on squats at 500 pounds, and I believe, and I'm probably lowballing him here, his max bench was somewhere like 350, 375, some insane number. This dude is just a wrecking ball of an athlete when he gets on the defensive line.
Yeah, you're getting an incredibly athletic kid who, you know, obviously just from looking at those videos, appears to be a guy who really enjoys the nuts and bolts of what it takes to be a really successful football player, getting in the weight room. I believe it is the first commitment for this class outside the state of Texas after last year.
Wait, what? I thought Texas wasn't getting guys in state, Joe.
Yeah,
I thought they were getting their ass handed to them in state.
Yeah, so what's the old line? Reports of my demise were
greatly exaggerated.
There we go. First commitment. You go to Utah for a kid out of Draper, Utah, Corner Canyon. Extremely athletic, extremely strong. But he's still at 250, and that's the thing. This is a guy that's extremely athletic, who's extremely strong, looks extremely hardworking, but he's still only 250 pounds right now. So you're hoping that, you know, over the course of a couple of years, he's not immediately called upon. He can get up to, you know, that 280 range that Texas likes some of their defensive linemen to be at, and, you know, turn into someone who, after working on the scout team and working kind of his way up to the two deep over the next couple of seasons, he's a guy that, you know, maybe by the time he's a redshirt sophomore, even like a junior, ready to go, be that guy who's like, hey, this guy's been in the program for a while. He's been building strength. He's kept his athleticism, and now he's ready to go. He's a guy that, you know, he's what successful programs take in order to build and, you know, see in a couple of years and hope that, you know, by the time that he is called upon, that all the work and effort and skill training and strength training has paid off and he's ready to be a contributor. Because before then, you know, he may not be ready. Perfect example is Charles Omenihu. You know, when he was part of that class of 2015, Texas and Charlie Strong had to play him right away. And I believe they played him at Fox because, you know, they knew he was a little undersized to be in the trenches right away. And then by the time he was, you know, by the time he was a senior, he's this, you know, 6'6", 277-pound, you know, guy who gets drafted in the NFL and wins Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen with Fillinger, but I think that, you know, it's better to have guys who are on, you know, a little bit longer development curves, have that capability to sit in the program a few years, work on what they need to work on, and then show up when the time's right. You know, you can take a guy like Vernon Broughton, who, you know, all these guys, I think I just mentioned this, all these guys are going to need some work once they get to college. But Vernon Broughton, there's a good chance that he may be ready a little bit earlier than Van Fillinger, but, you know, and be able to play right, you know, understand what it takes physically and skill-wise to get things done, you know, maybe a little bit earlier than his redshirt sophomore year. But that doesn't mean that Fillinger can't be productive, and then once it's his turn, he'll be ready to go. It's what healthy programs do. You know, when these guys are able to work, they're able to become, you know, 20-something-year-old men instead of, you know, 17, 18-year-old high school graduates. And that's, you know, you win with men. And I really think, especially in, you know, even in a spread pass happy Big 12 lead, like you win with guys who can, you win with the big guys, and, you know, you outrun others with the small guys, but you set the tone of the game with the big guys and, you know, set where the season's going to go with the big guys and how successful they are at their job. And they just grabbed two who are going to probably end up doing some pretty good things at Texas. And one just may do it a little bit quicker than the other.
Again, Oscar Giles doing pretty well on the recruiting trail. We stopped real short last episode of saying, you know, hey, Oscar Giles needs to pick up the slack. But Vernon Broughton and Van Fillinger, right now, a pretty good start to that 2020 defensive line class. Let's go ahead and talk about who are the guys who could possibly come after them. And there are really two guys. Princely Amemyelen, three? Who's the third? There's Princely Amemyelen, Alfred Collins.
And then I think you still have to keep Jalen Logan Redding as a possibility.
Okay.
The guy from Columbia, Rockbridge, Missouri. I know that he may not be as highly regarded as Princely or as Alfred Collins, and obviously he's a little bit further away than both of those guys, but I still think that he's a guy that could end up, you know, he's still going to be considering Texas, and Texas is going to be considering him. But I think at this point, you know, the I think he's probably running third behind the guys that are a little bit closer to home.
Well, Joe, let me ask you this because I have my answer. Of the three guys, which one would you prefer Texas take?
I think that you take the guy who's might have some of the biggest feet I've seen on a football player, who has, after the offseason began, when the offseason began, he was right around 250. Now at this point, he is approaching, you know, the mid 280s, and that's Alfred Collins. I think I've mentioned this
before. Completely agree.
I think I've mentioned this before. It's going to be very fun to watch how he does for his team this year. I don't think that this is that bold of a claim to say that he might be the best prospect to ever come out of Cedar Creek. I did a little research, and he is the first football player to even have so much as a profile on 247 Sports.
How far back did you go?
I mean, I think the school has only been open since like 2013 or 2012.
Really?
Okay, so
that makes sense.
He might be the best athlete to come out of Cedar Creek. And he's a lot of potential. He's extremely athletic, but sometimes it looks like he is kind of winging it out there. And that's not a bad thing when you're 6'5 and 280 something and you can do that. But it's gonna take a little bit more work when you're going against other 6'5 guys who are also 280 pounds. But not to say that I don't like Princely. I think Princely's a very solid prospect, and that, you know, in the right system, he can do the right things and, you know, build his strength up and show that he is a very good college player. But I think the potential of Alfred Collins, the size of Alfred Collins, and then also kind of the connections of Alfred Collins with his mother having played basketball at Texas, and you know, him being, you know, a guy that seems to really fit what your defense is doing. I think, you know, if I had to pick one of those three, he's the one I'm picking. But that's not to say that the other two wouldn't do well to fit in. I just think that he's got some of the, you know, sky high potential compared to some of the to those other two.
I completely agree with that, on top of the fact that when it came to Princely Mamielin, and I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I wasn't as impressed with him as I am with the ceiling that Alfred Collins potentially has. That's what I would look at here is, hey, you have your dude in Vernon Broughton. You have another project in Van Fillinger. Now, Princely Mamielin and Alfred Collins are both going to be projects. They're not guys who are going to come in and immediately play. Which one of those guys, to you, feels like they have the highest ceiling? And right now, I feel like Princely Mamielin is more of a guy you plug and play than Alfred Collins, who is a guy who I feel like might have more growth there and a higher ceiling than Mamielin. Which is why I would go with Alfred Collins. And no offense to Princely Mamielin, he is potentially as good, if not better, than Alfred Collins. However, right now, I feel like if I had to choose, I would go with Alfred Collins to take it to the next level. That is my honest opinion. So that's the next thing we have going on for Oscar Giles is, hey, Alfred Collins and Princely Mamielin, both going to be Texas versus Texas A&M battles. Another one for Oscar Giles against Terry Price. Can you win one of the two? That's all you need to do. A&M's probably going to want to take both of them, and they're both pretty darn close to Texas. Win one of the two. That's all you got to do for Oscar Giles, and then you have yourself a pretty darn solid defensive lineman class for the 2020 class. The next commit, Jalen Milroe. The 2021 class has their quarterback. A lot of people were hoping for Preston Stone. He wasn't going to commit anytime soon. So Texas said, hey, first come, first serve, and Jalen Milroe, the door is open for you, and he stepped right in and said, hey, this is mine. Jalen Milroe is now your 2021 quarterback. Joe, what are your thoughts?
He is an extremely exciting prospect. I mean, not the first thing I looked at is, you know, I met Jalen just after the heat wave, and, you know, I am right at 6'0", 6'0" and a half, you know, 6'1", maybe with some tall shoes on. And I noticed, you know what, I'm looking up to
6'3" in high heels. Don't ask me how I know that.
Yeah. So I noticed, like, you know what, I'm looking up to him. Quarterback, bam. I like that a lot already. I've heard great things about him before, super engaging, awesome to talk to. So I'm like, okay, you know what? This seems like a kid. I could understand that, you know, others would be interested in hearing what he's talking about and, you know, how he might recruit for a class. But at that time, you know, the relationship seemed to have just started. When I finally got around to watching his film, I was extremely impressed. He moves around naturally on the football field with the ball in his hands. He has a very great He moves around naturally on the football field with the ball in his hands. He makes great throws. He throws to the right spots, and he puts the right amount of touch on it when he needs to. There's a significant amount, I believe, that he needs to work on mechanically, but I think that's a lot of college or high school quarterbacks and nothing out of the ordinary. And that's something that he's probably not going to have to worry about immediately because, hey, Texas is now in a pretty good spot with quarterback recruiting now that they have guys like Jaquindon Jackson and Hudson Card ahead of him, Rashawn Johnson already on campus, and Casey Thompson backing up a Heisman candidate in Sam Ellinger. So I think he's joining a program that has a very, very good, if not great, quarterback coach in Tim Beck. And also, oh yeah, your head coach is a quarterback guy who has proven to be elite with similar quarterbacks to Jalen Milroe. So I'm extremely excited for him. He is unafraid to run between the tackles, which I noticed on his film. He's unafraid to really put it all out there for his team, and he can make the throws. It's just, you know, like a baseball pitcher. You know, sometimes you're going to get to college and get some mechanical refining, and I think that's what he needs. But other than that, he knows where the throws go. He knows how to make them, and he has the strength to get there. And it really is a sight to see once he puts it all together on his film. And plus, as Hayden has mentioned, like, this is a guy that's got a little bit of swing in Houston.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. It's weird, and, you know, it's the pretty typical thing to do, but watching him, and I'm currently facepalming as I say this, watching him reminded me of watching Vince Young. Take you a second to, you know, gag or whatever you want to do there with that take. But again, a very fluid runner. His acceleration is pretty darn impressive for a guy of his size. And the reason I say it reminds me of watching Vince Young is his throwing mechanics. As you said, they need some work, but it looks like he has a little bit of sidearm in his throw. It's just a little weird. It's a very compact throw, which makes it look like a sidearm throw, which makes me immediately think Vince Young. But his long ball is decent. At times, I believe it's too much of on a line. You probably need to polish up there. But his scrambles remind me a lot of Sam Ellinger back in high school in Westlake, where he is going east, west, east, west, north, south, basically. He's kind of trying to find a way through traffic. He either will chuck it downfield or he'll just take off. And when he takes off, again, the acceleration for a guy of his size is impressive. So, you know, a guy with a lot of upside as a prospect, not the most refined of the passers that Texas had on their board. But, hey, Jalen Milroe, as you said, on top of what he brings on the field, it's what he brings off the field. And boy, oh boy, that dude is a leader. A leader for sure. I mean, you see his commitment video. I love that 1% tagline he's got going on for himself, where he is always going to work 1% better. He's always going to play 1% better than his competition. And he's already a leader amongst some of the bigger recruits in the Houston area. You just heard Hayden Connor in his conversation with Jalen Milroe. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. It's given Texas an inroad to Tamishie Adelie and Bryce Foster, two guys who probably were heavier A&M leans, and now Texas is in a pretty good spot for both of those guys.
I think another thing that's really worth noting about Jalen Milroe is just looking at Katie Tompkins' high school history. There's a lot of different high schools out there. You got Katie High, who's a, you know, Texas high school powerhouse under Gary Joseph. You've got Katie Taylor, who's, you know, putting out offensive linemen like Hayden Connor, like Andrew Coker, like Bryce Foster. But Tompkins does not have the same football history. So let's go back a little bit. In 2015, looking at Max Preps, Tompkins was 3-7. In 2016, Tompkins was 2-8. in 2017, which would have been Jalen's freshman year, I believe. Tompkins was 0-9. And this past season in 2018 with Milroe at quarterback, 10-3. I think that says a lot, not only about obviously the Katy community is growing and Tompkins is definitely a part of that growth, but you got to win with players. And a certain player was under center for most of, if not all, of last year for Tompkins. And it resulted in easily, I think, one of the best and most successful teams in school history. And in just looking at it, they lose in November, early November, to Cinco Ranch. Then they play Fort Bend Elkins in the first round of the playoffs and win by 15. They defeat Cypress Falls in the second round, and they lose in early December to eventual state finalist, I believe, Beaumont Westbrook. So this is a team that obviously had some contributing talent around it. It's not an all-in-one-man thing, but it's pretty easy to give a lot of credit to Jalen Milroe for helping put together Tompkins' best season, and I think their best season in school history.
On top of that, my last point, Longhorn fans are going to love Milroe. He is going to be the guy for Texas who is the vocal recruiter on Twitter, on the road. He's going to be, I can't say it better than what Tomisi Adeleye said, which is Jalen Milroe will be the best recruiter Texas has ever seen, and three laughing, crying emojis. I completely agree with him, and Jalen Milroe is already proving it with the next guy, Hayden Connor. And we talked to Hayden Connor, but Joe, what are your thoughts on Hayden Connor and what he brings to the offensive line?
Obviously, he is a guy who, big, first of all, 6'6", 315.
Understatement.
I think, if I remember right, we were talking about him maybe 2 years ago, if I remember right, in 2017, and that we were talking about a 21 recruit, and he was at the time like an eighth grader going into ninth grade right about this time. And it's like, hey, this Hayden Connor kid, he's got it going on. Here we are talking about him again as a Texas commit. He has lived up to the hype that was surrounding him as he was entering Katy Taylor High School. I think that he's a guy who's very versatile. He, obviously he's a really good high school tackle, and I think he has the potential to continue to be a great high school tackle and then a great college tackle. But I think he could also do a lot of different things for you, especially depending on who else you might look at in this class. A guy like he even mentioned, Donovan Jackson, he's a guy that has great potential at tackle, but could be, have great potential at guard as well. But I think at the same time, being 6'6", being 315, and moving the way he does, he's going to have the ability to stay at tackle and continue to be really, really good there. I think that he's athletic enough to, if you watch his film, you see him moving a lot. Like, they're running outside zone, and he's getting up to the next level and making things happen. So he's really tenacious and really, one of my favorite qualities in an offensive lineman's film is, does it answer the question, would it really suck to play against him, with a yes? And I think that, I saw that in Tommy Brockermeyer. I saw that in Bryce Foster, and I see that again in Hayden Connor. I think it would truly suck to play defensive end against him for 48 minutes. Even if I were, 6'3 and 225 and playing defensive end for Katy, I think it'd
be... Oklahoma commit Marcus Stripling.
Right. I think that playing against him would be awful for 48 minutes, and I feel sorry for any of the youth in Katy that has to do that.
Yeah, well, like Marcus Stripling, who Hayden Connor, when he played Marcus Stripling, gave him the business. So take that for what it's worth. But yes, Hayden Connor, the dude is not just big, as you said. He's technically proficient. He is a guy who beyond the motor, beyond everything, is a guy who I think is pretty well polished and can be a guy who can swing from the tackle position to the guard position, really play wherever you need him to be, which it looks like, hey, he might need to do that with this class in this 2021 cycle that you potentially have coming up. But the next big guy, I'm not mincing words, big guy, to commit to Texas, and Andre Carrick. And again, we apologize profusely for our name butchering.
We did not consult our best Eastern European sources before this podcast.
No, we didn't. And so you guys will have to deal with the name that we have come up with for him. So we apologize if that is false, but for the next 5 to 10 minutes, that's what we're going to call him. So Carrick.
Yeah. The thing with Carrick is after watching Jake Major's film and then after watching Andre Carrick's film, I kind of looked at it and thought, you know what? Like, Carrick has very, very similar film, except he's 2 inches taller and probably 20 pounds lighter. And that's not a bad thing for your tackle. I mean, seeing his listed weight in the 250 range and then seeing Jerry Hamilton from ESPN say that he was his head coach, Riley Dodge, told Jerry Hamilton that he was right at 270. It kind of made me wonder if my idea that, you know what, this kind of looks like Calvin Anderson was off. I still think that's the case. Obviously, he's growing a little bit quicker than Calvin Anderson did, because Calvin Anderson said over and over at his pro day, you know, I arrived in Houston at Rice at, you know, right at 250. It looks like Carrick's going to be bigger, but, you know, going back to my Jake Majors comparison, at least in their film, what you'll see is a lot of tenacity. You see a guy play through the whistle, bury his then 250-pound frame on top of people all the time. He is very good at doing what I like to call escorting people away from the play with his upper body. He doesn't necessarily run against the sled as well as Hayden Connor does in his film, but when the guy gets out of balance against him, he's very good at using his upper body in order to continue to knock them off balance and get them out of the way, or to throw them out of the way. And I really enjoy that trait. His feet are phenomenal. He's able to move quickly in a balanced way. He's just got to get a little weight on him. And I think the fact that, you know, now that we know that he's 270 instead of, you know, the assumed maybe 240, 250 like earlier, I think that even says a lot of better things about his upside. I mean, he seems extremely technically proficient. And as we've seen, you know, the staff likes to find at least one or two tackles that they can, quote, grow, add 20 to 30 pounds on, and let them, like, it's very similar to defensive line, and marinate for a couple of years. Texas's starting left tackle is probably going to be a result of that process. And Carrick looks like something, you know, kind of similar to Cosme. They're a little bit different players, but they're going to have similar growth patterns. And he's, you know, just got to put in the work in the weight room, but it seems like he's a guy that, you know, is your prototype tackle once he has that weight on him, just because of the skill he shows and the toughness that he shows at that position.
Yeah, and not only is his physical profile that of Samuel Cosme, but if you look at the tapes of both Carrick and of Cosme, they're pretty similar. I'm talking about their junior films. They're both very similar in terms of the motor, in terms of the abilities. That's kind of been Texas's bread and butter, is getting those guys who underrated 3-star, you know, low to maybe high 3-star, and just turning them in, and who just had the right body, and just turning them into guys like Williams, Cosme, and Donald Hawkins. As we've found, you know, former UT left tackle and NFL offensive lineman Donald Hawkins is also a very big fan of Carrick, stating that Longhorn Nation, you guys are getting a good one. Andre Carrick trains here with me in Dallas, and it's been fun to watch his growth over the last couple months. His quickness and athleticism is unreal. I look forward for him making his case to be number one offensive tackle in the state of Texas. Hashtag hook 'em. So that's some pretty high praise coming from an NFL offensive lineman and former, what was it, second team All Big 12 back in 2013, Donald Hawkins.
Yeah, something like that.
So
I can't remember.
the guy has some high praise, and honestly, he's, you know, it's funny you say he's technically proficient, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but coming originally from Bosnia, that means he's pretty new, you know, relatively new to the game of football. Coming in at 6'5", 6'6", 260, get some weight on him to put him up to 280. And you guys, Texas has a pretty solid left tackle prospect in this guy. So that leaves you with the question going into the rest of this cycle and into 2021. We cannot stress enough how loaded 2021 is with offensive tackle and offensive guard talent. It is like the 2020 cycle with running backs, but with offensive linemen. You know, with how many five-star running backs are there in this cycle? It's crazy. So, Texas is in a pickle. Or I don't know pickle, but they're in a situation where do you continue to really push for Chad Lindbergh and take his commitment and potentially lose out on having a spot open in 2021? I have my answer. Joe, what do you think?
I think you do. I think as long as you, you know, stay the course for both Brockermeyers, who both have been offered, as long as you stay the course for Donovan Jackson and Bryce Foster, I think that, you know, it's worth taking five in both classes a try. And I think also Chad Lindbergh is worth it. I think that, you know, while there's a portion that may be dissatisfied that, you know, they may have expected him wearing burnt orange or may have at least expected a decision out of him already. You know, it's tough. This isn't easy. This is a life-changing decision that you got to make, you know, before you can even, you know, rent a car, let alone a bunch of other things, before you can even have a beer. So
or vote.
I
missed that one.
Yeah, exactly. What are my priorities? but I, you know, Chad Lindbergh is definitely good enough to where even if you're dissatisfied with this timeline, which is somewhat kind of maybe understandable, whatever, he's good enough to be a player that does well in this class and fits into this offensive line class. And, you know, he's a guy that you've built a relationship with for a long time. I don't think you just go ahead and abandon that good of a player because of what's coming up behind him. I think that you have to recruit each class, you know, as its own, especially with the offensive line. Not necessarily totally in a vacuum, but I feel, you know, you have to put one foot in front of the other, and 2020 comes before 2021. So I think you continue to recruit Chad Lindbergh. I think you continue to try and push to get him in your class. And, you know, once it's time and once all the 2020s have signed and it's time to, you know, figure out the 2021 landscape, that's when you kind of have to worry about that problem, despite how elite it is.
So I'm not saying here that Texas doesn't have any more room for Chad Lindbergh. They do. The question is, and they probably would take him. The question is, do you? If you're the Texas staff, do you do that? And honestly,
I mean, you're playing against your best case scenario, because right now you only have one offensive lineman from that elite 2021 class committed. It's not like you have 4 and 4 in both classes. You're playing against a lot of what ifs. When you're, you know, trying to fill one spot versus four, you know, so
let's play this game.
That's my hang up.
Would you take an extra offensive lineman in the 2021 class and leave out Chad Lindbergh, or would you rather take Chad Lindbergh and miss out on one of the elite guys in the 2021 class? Because my answer is take 2021. Those guys, I feel like, already might be past Chad Lindbergh. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a really tough question, obviously. But I still think that you go with Lindbergh. That's my pick. And I know that's not everybody's pick, but I think
one in the hand is worth two in the bush sort of thing.
He's still a really good player. I mean, his film is still his film. He very much rounds out what would be a well-rounded class. I mean, you'll have Jalen Garth as your tackle. You'll have Jake Majors, you'll have Andre Karich and Jalen Garth likely as your tackle guys. You got Jake Majors and Logan Parr as your interior guys. And then you got Chad Lindbergh, who could be a tackle guy, could be a guard guy, could be both. Like, I think that's a very well-rounded class. And I think that's one that you can build for the future on extremely well, especially, you know, once it's time for Sam Cosmi to move on to the next level or graduate, and Derek Kerstetter to move on to the next level and graduate. That's the type of guys you want to have growing in your system, ready to go, especially also after you just took four in 2019, but one of them was a four to play three JUCO. I don't think taking five in 2020, especially if that fifth ends up being Chad Lindbergh, is a bad thing. I think that it's worth it despite what we know about the talent in 2021.
And I'm not quite sure because, I mean, think about this, and this is a potentially possible 2021 class. Tommy Brockemeyer, James Brockemeyer, Hayden Connor, Donovan Jackson, Bryce Foster. Think about that. That is a hell of a 2021 class.
And if there's still competition for those guys, you still have guys like Ruben Fothery who you could recruit as well. And I mean, I'm sure there's even more. Luis Chavarria, not Trent Pullen.
Savion Bird,
Cullen Montgomery. Like that's like eight names we just listed off that we know off the top of our head, because of how quality that line class is. And it sounds like I'm making your argument right now, and maybe I am. But at the same time, you know, I really think that, you know, you get the guys and you build a well-rounded class in back-to-back years, and I think you can do that if you take five and that fifth ends up being Chad Lindbergh. But, I mean, it's a tough decision. It's real tough just because, like you mentioned, how strong that
– There isn't a right answer. There's not a right answer.
Hey, so we disagree.
But I think we're getting it off there, y'all. Again, thank y'all for listening. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com. And you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find both of us at the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. And on that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.